the most customary, I think, type of situation where you see a third-party opinion is where the lawyer knows something about the client's legal status and the recipient doesn't know those sorts of things, and they're seeking the assurances relating to that. The key example that comes to mind is where you're the lawyer for an entity and you're going to be providing opinions regarding valid existence and authorization and good standing. That's something that's in the legal domain, and that's something that another party might not feel comfortable relying on reps and warranties from a non-lawyer client. Another reason that you'll see opinions sought is a diligence or QC, diligence tool or sort of a QC quality control sort of mechanism. Just knowing there's another set of eyes looking at your documents, that is not really the stated purpose for opinions, but nevertheless, I think we all know that when we put our work product out there, maybe somebody else is catching a typo here or there, or correcting a number, all as part of their document review and in order to give the appropriate opinions. Another reason that is supports the seeking and the getting of opinions is efficiency. That's a stated reason. Perhaps you're in a finance transaction and you're the borrower's general counsel as far as its corporate matters, and you're going to be giving those entity opinions that we all know, but the governing law may also be your state's law, and the other side is suggesting, why don't you give us the enforceability opinion on the documents, because that will save money. Now, we'll talk about down the road in the presentation how the enforceability opinion is where you start sliding into areas that become more of a concern ethically, because you're speaking to another party whose lawyers drafted the documents about the enforceability of those documents against your client, and you start having more ethical heartburn when it comes to that. So that efficiency cost saver rationale is one that you might question. There may be ways to go about it differently to put you more in line with how the ethical roles would really seem to be. The other reason that you'll hear people give is that it's, you can use estoppel against your client as the signer of a document because the lawyer has given an opinion that the documents are enforceable. Whether that actually would work in practice and be a valid argument against a borrower on a set of loan documents who says, gee, this provision is enforceable, and the lender and their counsel waive, well, your lawyer gave an opinion, you're a stop from arguing that. Whether that would actually hold up is something that one might question, but it also raises the issue as we go through the presentation about what sorts of things should you be disclosing in your engagement to your client about the potential adverse impact of giving a legal opinion, particularly in the enforceability arena. So to go ahead and proceed with giving and to undertake and continue with giving a legal opinion, you need to reconcile the duties and the ethical obligations of the lawyer with that engagement in order to move forward. And there are two sets of rules that lawyers should concern themselves with. One is their duties, which include the duty of care, the duty of loyalty, and the duty of confidentiality. These are the kind of duties that if you breach, you'll be guilty of malpractice as a lawyer. The duty of care is a duty that you actually owe not only to your client, but also to the opinion recipient. The duty of loyalty and the duty of confidentiality are not duties that you would owe to the recipient, but they are duties that you owe to your client. So you have to keep those in mind throughout the process as you proceed in negotiating and issuing the opinion and in talking to your client and keeping the client informed about that. The source of the law on duties is something that we provided quite a few materials, but case law, customary practice material like bar reports, and the restatement of the law of lawyers that's put out by the American Law Institute. Those are some of the places that you can learn more about those sorts of duties. We're not going to go into that in any level of detail. We're going to focus more on the ethical obligations and professional responsibility. But it is important to remember as part of your responsibilities as a lawyer that you need to be competent in giving an opinion. You have to be qualified to give that opinion to the recipient because you owe them a duty of care. As far as the ethical obligations and professional responsibilities that you may have, we're going to use the model rules of professional responsibility that the ABA has promulgated and different states have adopted in varying forms to give you a flavor of what the ethical obligations may be that are relevant to third-party opinion practice. But we want to caution that, what I say here today is based on the model rules. There may be variations in the jurisdictions in which you practice, so it's important that you would become familiar with those. And I know Maryland's written in particular on Texas, and I don't know if you have anything you'd like to say on that. But
sure, and I have looked at it from the Texas point of view. Our rules, we don't follow the model rules, but in effect, where we come out is exactly where the model rules. Language is different, and I always warn people when you're looking at this and you're sort of researching Texas cases, don't be alarmed that nothing matches up, but we get there just a little.